Hello and welcome to Charity Digital's Digital Fundraising Day 2019. It's great to have you with us, and thanks very much for coming along and registering and joining us. We hope you enjoyed our first webinar of the day, and got some useful tips and tricks from the videos as well. It's a really exciting day for a number of reasons. Obviously, we're hosting this for the very first time, as a virtual conference. And, so pleased that you've all managed to join us today. But we're actually taking the opportunity to launch our 2020 physical conference as well, which will be held this year at the Olympia Conference Centre. We had over 200 delegates join us last year at Resource for London, and we're shooting for bigger again this year. The lineup's starting to take shape, but we'll be sharing more information with you throughout the day, so make sure to keep tuned and keep an ear out for that. But back to the topic at hand. So this podcast was all about, digging deep into digital fundraising and, what's it all about? It'd be quite a confusing term. I know I was there on the day, but Jonathan, you've had some time to reflect on this. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah, it's such an important area, really. If we look at the statistics from our last Charity Digital survey, we had only about 50% of respondents were actually doing any type of online fundraising. And it's really clear as you listen to the first podcast how enormous the opportunities are for charities to take advantage of this channel for raising a lot more money. There's some obvious stuff in there, but there are some quite kind of surprising insights as well. And some of the things that people have done have had impacts in areas beyond the kind of obvious thing, like support our latest, be it charity fun run or bake out or whatever the activity is. So there's some really interesting content in there.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me when I went back through it and had another listen was the onus that was put around doing the basics right. And I think that's quite a crucial component for for charities at all levels, actually, because I think you need, not only when you're starting out and beginning that fundraising journey that we talk about quite a lot, but you need to make sure you're hitting milestones along the way. But I think it's really important for some of the larger charities as well to have that reality check and be able to go, hang on a minute, like, do I need to strip this down to basics, especially if things aren't necessarily going in the right direction or going as well as they thought they did. So I think that for me was quite a crucial part of the podcast. Another one was being at the testing and learning and being in an iterative environment and never be afraid to kind of push yourself out there a little bit, but make sure you've got the practice in place to be able to learn from it more than anything else.
But we don't want to give away all of the content anyway, so I think we should cut over to the podcast now. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome to the Charity Digital Podcast. I'm Chris Hall, and today we're here to talk about the vast topic that is digital fundraising. What it is, how it's changed, and what other charities are doing to succeed. Today we're joined by three amazing guests. First of all, fellow Geordie, Emily Casson, who heads the award-winning digital marketing team at Cats Protection and chairs the IOF's Northeast Group. She developed and implemented Cats' first digital fundraising strategy, creating a multi-million pound revenue stream in the process. And in 2018, was named one of Fundraising Magazine's top 25 fundraisers under 35. Also with us, we have Katie Jones. Katie joins us with 15 years of fundraising experience, working across community, corporate and individual giving. But her main focus has been grants and trusts, and she's raised over $2 million for her last charity. Katie joins us today from the Katie Piper Foundation. And lastly, but certainly not least, we have Matt Collins. Matt is the Managing Director of Platypus Digital, a digital marketing agency for charities and other organisations doing great work. Matt is often spotted on a number of news channels and publications talking about the charity sector, and was named one of the top 50 most influential fundraisers by Fundraising Magazine in 2015. Welcome, everybody. Pleasure to have you all. How's everybody doing today?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah.
Pretty damn good.
I'm pretty good, thank you. Good to hear. So I guess the best place to start the day is kind of that, it's one of those how long's a piece of string questions. But I think with the ever-changing environment that is fundraising and now digital fundraising. I think the first question is, you know, what does digital fundraising mean? And, you know, for people at different points of and charities and different sort of stages of their life cycle, or fundraising life cycle. I think it means something different to just about everybody within the sector, but, you know, with you three experts in the room, it'd be great to have get your opinion on what exactly it means to you. So why don't we start with you, Emily? Why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, well, there's so many kind of fantastically long definitions that are really complicated, but I would say it's just using digital channels to fundraise, and it's really simple as that. So you can get into talking about having a digital mindset and thinking about the way it all flows together, but it is really bringing it back to basics. It's just fundraising, just through a different channel.
Matt, what about you?
Yeah, well, I totally agree with that. You can totally overcomplicate it, and that's a really good way to summarize it and keep it simple. I also think, like a lot of digital marketing with charities generally, it's been very co-opted by some very famous examples, and the understanding is very limited to just those examples. So going back, it's a few years now, but to like Ice Bucket Challenge and the makeup selfie and all of that kind of stuff, which, you know, if you're working day to day in this sector, you know, you sort of bristle at the very mention. I saw Emily bristle just as I said those words, which is just true and a very natural common reaction. But then if you go to the senior managers and directors and trustees in charities, that is all they know about digital fundraising. And so they think that's what it is. So you have to come up with some very clever idea that's nothing to do with your goals. It needs to be a sharp burst of activity, and then you need to bank minimum, you know, 3 or 4 million from the activity. And that's what digital fundraising is. And it's just not true. It's great day-to-day activity. It's emailing your supporters, getting them to raise more money on their Just Giving pages for, you know, the latest running event that they're doing. It's asking people for donations on your websites and seeing what images lead to more donations. It's a real, you know, graph day to day about raising money online. So yeah, for me, it's a lot of day to day activity, and it's not really about big famous examples that have been co-opted and, you know, kind of damaged the value of some of that stuff to me.
Interesting. Yeah. And Katie, what about you? What does digital fundraising mean to you?
Well, I think it Casey Piper Foundation, we're, you know, quite young in our fundraising journey. I think the foundation has only been proactively fundraising for about 3 years. So we would say that we're probably not really thinking about digital fundraising yet. We're just starting to test and learn. However, most of our fundraising activity is done digitally. So you could say that actually the vast majority of our fundraising is actually digital fundraising. And so, yeah, for us, it's working out what that means, how we're going to utilise that, how we best invest resources to get the maximum returns, and just seeing kind of what works for us. So, yeah, we're really, you know, much, much earlier in our development than Katz is, for example.
But everybody needs to start somewhere, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think with that in mind, it's kind of, you know, what was the beginning of your journey?
I mean, so we have very recently launched Text to Donate properly at Katie Piper, and integrated that into a social media campaign, and seen some really nice results from that, and just sort of testing kind of what works for our founders' followers, because obviously Katie has got a really nice media profile. She's got 1 million followers across social media. So she's sort of doing some interesting testing around kind of how best to reach her supporters and turn them into our supporters, and generating income from that. But then, you know, I'd say 95% of our individual giving is done through online donation. So it's about how we then best utilise and maximise that, for example. So, yeah, it varies.
Interesting. Any comments?
I'd be interested to know a bit more about that, because you presumably, like me, have been around since before digital fundraising was so famous.
And yeah.
So the way we think at a platypus of fundraising generally aligns to digital fundraising. You mentioned individual giving. Mm-hmm. So the absolute core of digital fundraising for me sits with individual giving. Where do you see it kind of infiltrating, as it were, other types of fundraising you're much more familiar with since before Facebook was a thing?
I think for us, it really is going to focus in the individual giving as well as like community and challenge. Obviously, like you mentioned, you know, like all challenge fundraising is done online, thankfully. No more supporter live forms, although I did get one from a community fundraiser recently. So, you know, I think very much those kinds. It would be interesting to see. I mean, I suppose you've got things like the Big Give, which we're just going to go into a... We're just testing out with our supporters and trying to get the pledges at the moment. But it'd be interesting to see how that might work across grants and trusts, which is kind of my bread and butter in fundraising experience. I mean, obviously everything's gone to a digital platform, but does that make it digital fundraising? No, I don't think it does really. But yeah, it would be interesting to see how that develops. And my last charity, all of our individual giving was still done through post, and it was very successful. But you know, at KPF, I don't think we've printed anything in a very long time.
Avast's antivirus CloudCare has over 400 million active users in their network who provide a continual stream of data that helps quickly identify and destroy any cyber threat and predict future ones too. With Avast Business, charities get award-winning protection and a cloud-based management portal that enables an administrator to manage security from any device, all for the low price of £6 per user. Find out more at www.charitydigitalexchange.org.
So, Emily, to put you on the spot a little bit, is there anything you want to add to that conversation? I know, as Katie mentioned, you're a little bit further down the digital fundraising pipeline now.
Yeah, I think in our case, I mean, I came from a regional fundraising background and just bugged my director so long to create a digital fundraising post. And my initial job title was Senior Individual Giving Officer brackets digital, because they were that not certain it was going to take off, this digital thing. So now I've got a whole team and we've gone beyond looking at kind of Facebook acquisition and things to be like, how can we transform every area of fundraising? So we've been doing a lot with major donors, doing some really targeted Facebook advertising and other digital advertising. And we did some amazing email appeals with videos that went down really well. And it's also been looking at legacies. We've had great success recently in people signing up to pledge money in their will, which is not your traditional kind of model of fundraising where they start with a low level ask and you build it up, that we've got cold people coming straight in pledging the gift in their will, which is amazing and is very disrupting the model. And what we found, similar to what you were saying, kind of what your supporters want and do they want to print, do they not, that our charity is 90 odd years old. So we have people that absolutely they want the direct mail and that is all they want. They don't want to use email. But increasingly, the existing supporter base was moving online, but also the new donors we're recruiting behave in very different ways. That we're in year two or three, a strategy to recruit 100,000 new regular givers through digital. So it's quite a big program, and we found that the attrition's lower, but they also want more interaction with us. They want more regular emails. So it, as a charity, it's been hafting a shift, because we are an old established charity, so it's been hafting a shift the mindset in terms of how can we connect with people online. And I do get that I'm lucky, it's cats, it's the internet, but that's also the challenge in terms of how do we cut through when there are millions of cat videos. Why would you watch a cat video and then donate? So it's been really clever on the creative and the kind of asking.
You've got that challenge again of the sort of famous example of cats is kind of cat videos and hilarious things, and you're coming out from a different point of view. It's like, you know, cats have needs, and you know, you're trying to do something good for cats. So you've got that challenge in there as well. But it's interesting you talk about those different teams like legacies and stuff. And like, I don't believe there's a single area of fundraising that's not ripe for having a digital element added to it. It will make it more sustainable and more profitable for charities in the long term. Legacies is a really good example of that. I think if you're planning a sort of old school legacy, you know, pledge acquisition campaign, you're going straight for the old demographic. You're going to people in their 70s and their 80s, and you're buying DM lists off the back of that. Or even if you're doing it online, that's the audience you'd be profiling. But that's, you know, that's not how sort of younger generations are even really behaving. So like a lot of first pledges, which is where you can really hook people in legacy fundraising, have been made in people's 30s. when they're buying a house, when they're having kids, and they suddenly go, gee, I've got stuff, and I've got people that like would actually need something to happen to that stuff if I wasn't to be around tomorrow. Better do something about that. Where do they turn first? The internet, straight away. And they want it to be quick. They're not printing anything off. They're not going to the local solicitors because they have no idea who that is. So services like Farewell and others are really disrupting all of that. So every area, if you're doing digital fundraising transformation program one by one, starting with individual giving, because there's a huge amount of that into legacies, challenge events, community, and you can just keep it going. There's not a single area that digital is not going to make a big impact or result. Isn't already doing so, I reckon.
Yeah, and I think as well there's a snowball effect in terms of when I started as our first digital fundraiser, it was very much me going to all the fundraising teams saying, can I come along at your meetings? Can I talk about this? And they very much saw as digital something going on over there. Whereas then they started seeing the success everybody was having in the corporate team and the events team. And then all of a sudden it was kind of every fundraising manager saying, right, can we do this? Can we do that? Can we do that? Which is when obviously we had capacity issues and we now have a whole team of people doing it. But that's great to see the change from us having to push it out and be like, oh, can we talk to you about digital? We could be doing this. To then being like, oh, we've seen this. Can we do that? Can we do that? And getting really excited and engaged by it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's gradually happening for charities across the sector. But there were a few charities doing digital years ago, whereas now pretty much every charity, whether they realise it or not, is doing digital fundraising.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And just building off the back of that, I think, you know, charities start digital, you know, it's been around for a while now, this digital fundraising thing, whatever you want to call this entity. But it's even changed so much, I think, over the last couple of years. I mean, it started something that, you know, as you've already mentioned, that Ice Bucket Challenge, which was in 2015, 2016, I can't remember. I think I took part in it. And it's kind of evolved since then to be all-encompassing. You know, we're now looking at, you know, individual user personas, personalization, all this type of thing. What has been some of the changes you've noticed and that you've put to best use in your charity?
Well, I think... So I very much want to ban the word go viral and anything like that, because a lot of trustees or directors, the only thing they know about digital fundraising is that sort of thing, whereas actually what it's about is the basics. So it's moved like a few years ago when everybody was talking about like, ooh, AI, the robots are coming, it's going to change, to now actually stripping it down to the basics. So I ban anything that we call shiny new toys at work. So there are a lot of people and a lot of agencies that will pitch us certain things, but it's actually what is going to raise the most money and what's going to do the most for our supporters. So we're increasingly moving away from just talking about acquisition and Facebook advertising to be talking about stewardship a lot more and personalization and emails and website. And a lot of my jobs is sending out emails to supporters, driving them to take an action on the website and do some Facebook advertising. That yes, I do the innovation and the really exciting, cool projects that everybody wants to know about, the collection boxes that meow and all sorts of fun things, which I do love. But the main basis, and I think a lot of people are moving that way, because a few years ago when we were doing Facebook advertising, like we started doing it 3 years ago, and we're one of the only charities doing it, and it was a really new thing, whereas now it's just so standard, pretty much everybody's doing it. So it is looking at like the actual platforms are going to change. They're not as cost effective as they were a few years ago, but I think the way people's mindset have changed in terms of supporters, they want that two-way conversation. Mm-hmm. That they're not happy with you just posting something and then waiting, maybe getting a reply. They want an instant reply. So I think that's very much the direction it's moving in over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in this, in banning shiny new toys. That's really awesome to hear that you're doing that, because so much of digital marketing generally and digital fundraising kind of within that is about shiny new toys. It's about asking what the latest trends are. It's about chasing fads. You know, it's about like augmented reality and you know, virtual reality and kind of all these different things that are not really going to get you any actual money for your actual cause, let's face it. Or at least if it is, or if it's worth investing in and just putting a bit of money behind innovating around, it's to be done by larger charities with integration budgets, which is less than 1% of all charities. So you need to, as any charity should, have a look at the resources you've got available to you, make sure you're doing those basics before you do anything else, I think. And those shiny new toys, you can leave the people who've got the innovation budgets to perfect some of them, but it's your responsibility to use your donors' money in a really responsible way and to use it in a way that you know is going to get a return.
Yeah. I think for us that's really, really reassuring to hear, you know, like just starting with the basics and trying things out and testing and doing things that we've always done but doing them really well and making sure that, you know, when people donate on the website that actually they do get a personalised response, but that's automated so that, you know, we're not even a team of two, we're two bodies, but neither of us work full time. So I think between us we're 1.2 fundraisers. I mean, we're tiny, so it's about, you know, how do we utilise digital methods to increase our capacity, but it's also really reassuring that actually we don't have to start thinking outside the box with our digital fundraising. We can use it to do what we're already doing better and give people a better supporter experience.
Yeah, and you know, you say you're kind of 1.2 people as if you're kind of unique as a charity.
No, we're not. No, I know.
You're most charities.
Yep.
Yeah. You might be most people even listening to this. You know, you need to be sitting down and going, well, there's a huge menu of things I could be doing, but I'm not going to do most of them. Simply don't have the resources.
Absolutely.
So we're going to focus on what works, and that's great. And that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, it's about working out which of those things are the things that are going to work best. And utilising the assets that we have really well.
I think they're all really good points. A lot of the charities that we speak to chase fads, and it's like, oh, I need to be, no, I'm a small charity with a small number of people, but you know, I need to be working on user journeys or personalisation and that sort of stuff. I need to be building personas, when in fact it's all about getting the basics right, as you said as well, Emily. And I don't think there's enough. You know, I think charities need to focus on, you know, what works best for them or what will work best for them and how best to allocate those resources as well. So, yeah, very valid points.
Hey, it's Joel here from Charity Digital. Thanks for downloading the pod. If you haven't already, head over to charitydigitalnews.co.uk and join the 36,000 charities who are keeping ahead of the digital curve through articles, webinars, podcasts and events. Register with us for free daily content.
To build on that again, what are some of the new fundraising opportunities available for charities, and what are some of the best resources that could use? I don't know what's helped you, Katie, as you have embarked on this fundraising transformation journey.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd call it a fundraising transformation journey. It's just kind of dipping our toe in the water and seeing what works, really. I think, you know, we really are taking a very much test and learn approach. But like I say, we've got this huge asset in our founder. She's got this fantastic social media following, which, you know, most charities of our size would give their right arm for. You know, bearing in mind our turnover is just over $500,000 a year. So, we really are like most charities. So it's about, you know, like, so we've used, made real use of Instagram. We found that our supporters really engage with us much more quickly on Instagram rather than Facebook. We speak to a slightly different audience on Twitter. And then using Katie's profile to drive her followers to the charity. And seeing how best that works. So in the campaign that we did only a couple of weeks ago, if she put something in stories, we saw an instant uptake of donations via text message. So really simple call to action that people didn't have to like go and log into. There was, you know, it was really smooth and easy for them. If she put it in her grid, we saw barely any result from that at all. So, I mean, we are really just at playing with stuff and seeing kind of what happens and what works, and just kind of getting some feedback and some thoughts around it.
But I think that's a really good point in itself, right? It's a testing environment.
Yep.
And like digital marketing as a whole is a testing environment. And even when you attribute it to fundraising, it's all about, you know, going back to the previous point, finding what works, and you'll not do that without being able to, you know.
No, absolutely.
As you said, dip your toe in the water, see what, you know, put some stuff out there, see what works, see what doesn't. So Matt, what about you with some of the charities you work with? What's some of the, you know, key resources that you point charities to?
Well, it's interesting that you talk about the trying to get Katie's supporters kind of involved in the charitable side of things. A little while ago, we worked with Lumos, which is a charity that JK running set up. So they have an awful lot of interest from the wizarding world.
Yes, I know. I've met people from Lumos before. They're really interesting bunch. They're a great charity.
Such a similar challenge.
Yes, so, very similar.
They are a great bunch. But in terms of like the resources that we point people to, we're allowed to plug our own stuff. We have a resource.
I was
going to
plug you off.
Yeah. Okay, you do it. Yeah. Just rewind that back.
Action.
One of the newest resources is probably Instagram. They've just released the donate sticker for nonprofits, and created the ability to do 24-hour fundraisers via stories. So that's going to be an interesting one. I think it's a very natural extension of Facebook Donate. You know, Instagram is just another part of Facebook, really. So it'd be interesting to see if native behavior on Facebook actually translates into donations. But if you look at the trend of gaming for good, for example, where gamers do these, you know, up to 50-hour gaming marathons, and people donate to them through that, then that kind of virtual event style fundraising, like with British Heart Foundation's My Marathon being one of the more famous examples of virtual events, that kind of using the internet to sort of fundraise on your own terms, at your own kind of pace, whether it's for a specific 24 hours or like doing 26 odd miles for a marathon across whatever time you want. There's a real sort of move towards that. Again, if you have the resources to implement it, it's not something that everyone has to do. But those are things that can be looked at. But again, you know, there's email fundraising is almost a trend when you think about it, because there are very few UK charities are maximising email marketing the way US charities are. Over in the US, about 25% of every 25 cents in every dollar raised there comes through email. Very few charities over here would say they're doing anything like that. They'll send out a newsletter once a month when they remember. Sounds like cats are doing more than that, which is amazing. But you know, if you think of that as a trend, email is the least shiny tool in the entire world. It's really boring. We all get too much email. It's been around for decades now, really. But if you were able to really get a hold of that, then every charity can do that. You don't have to be a gaming for good proponent or innovator or anything like that. You get a hold of a trend like that and you're absolutely set.
Yeah, well, I think that team motto, because I mean, every cool team has a motto,
of course,
is think big, start small, and scale quickly. So we have our kind of big picture what we're going to do, but a lot of our starting small is some exactly what Matt said on email. We've done a lot of kind of recruited leads through Care to the Petition site and other places and put them on a really nice welcome journey. So a lot of our time and effort is spent on segmentation and all the not sexy stuff, the not shiny toy stuff, the all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But that's working really, really well. And that's converting leads into regular givers, because we can show what the organisation's all about and what difference their support will make through a lovely email journey. And it's all personalised, and that's the beauty of email, that you can just log in and see what people are interested in. Because people are clicking on things, they're telling you this. And so few charities actually ever segment it, which my pet hate is like a newsletter that just goes to everybody regardless of where they are in the country or what they like. It's like, that is one of the key things you can just start with. That, like I say, nearly every charity has a newsletter. You could make that newsletter a bit better each month by actually sitting for an hour and just looking at the stats and looking at what your audience is interacting with. And then you can build on that and start doing like welcome journeys and all sorts of things. And so, I mean, we are doing gaming for good as well internally, because there's a big crossover of people that love cats and people that love gaming. And there's a lot of research into the mental health aspect of it and kind of indoor aspect of it. So we have just launched Pause and Players. So people can, very much community fundraising style, people can do an event for us, but we're looking for partnerships with some of the kind of big gaming studios and things on that. And that was something that actually came through one of our supporters. That one of our supporters is like, right, I want to go do a stream for you. And we were like, that sounds amazing. We will go look into what exactly that entails and what it is and what payment mechanism that is and get sorted. And then we realised that, well, actually, this whole community of people that we need to tap into. And so it's a mixture of what we're doing, the basics. So we do the kind of 70-20-10 model. So 70% of our time is business as usual. So that's things like your Facebook advertising, your email marketing, website donation pages. 20% is business as usual plus. So it might be a new suite of creative or something on Facebook. So something we know and familiar with, but slightly different. 10% is innovation. So not shiny toys, because that is my pet hate, but it's very much looking at what can we do, like gaming for good, that actually that seems like a good opportunity where we could make money and our supporters would like it. And so it really depends on what stage your charities are as to what you're kind of looking to do. Because, I mean, I do always plug Matt's Platypus Digital Training, that it's a great overview of the different channels and things like Google AdWords account, the amount of charities that don't have that, and they're not even getting it's free money. So it's things like the absolute basics. And I think, like we're all saying, the trends are there's so many nice new shiny fads, but it's actually going back to basics and making sure you've got that in place. And making sure you can donate to the website. Because the amount of charities that mm-hmm. want to do additional fundraising campaign, and then when I say, well, how would people actually donate? And they'll say, oh, we haven't got that functionality on the website yet.
Yeah, and like that, and that's an attitude of lots of charities is almost to kind of go, well, I'll just build a website, I'll chuck that in the corner because that's boring, and that's done, and that's a static thing, and I'm just going to leave that there, and then I'm going to move on to all the super shiny things. It's like gaming for good is VR, AR, and all the rest of it, because that's way more interesting to me, and that feeds my need to sort of get involved in new things all the time, rather than doing the effective job of raising money for your charity, changing the lives mm-hmm. of the people whose lives you change.
Yeah.
Whereas if you actually spend some time working on your site speed, because if you have a really slow website, people are not going to bother donating, they're not going to wait for it to load. Most people will give up on a website loading after 3 seconds, like you really don't have a lot of time. You know, people aren't going to bother donating to any viral campaign if it did come your way, because you're going to get a huge amount of traffic, and then none of them are going to actually bother donating. It's going to be like millions of people walking past your shop front and never coming in.
Yeah, and I think it's one mobile that. What does your website look like on a mobile? Because the majority of people will be viewing it on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of websites I see that I just want to jump in and interview.
Yeah.
I am that annoying person. You could do this differently.
But it is so often overlooked.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things that, you know, people focus on the website online and forget that, you know, a massive part of that audience is on mobile now.
Yeah. Well, we know about 80% of people will be actually clicking and looking at the stuff and donating through a mobile or tablet.
Yeah.
So actually the majority of people, so yes, it still needs to work on a desktop, but actually the same for emails. What does it look like on a mobile? And that's where we test it first and then make sure it looks okay on your desktop.
Yeah, it's a mobile first approach, right? That everyone needs to take forward.
Well, the only other point I would make is going back to the gaming for good side of things, and what I was saying about every area of fundraising is kind of ripe for like digital disruption, transformation, whatever you want to call it. Gaming for good is just community fundraising.
Mm.
Like, there's a real sort of fear behind it, going, well, gaming, I don't understand that. I don't understand why people would sit in a room and play games and how you're doing money to that. You know, it's no different to saying, I don't understand why somebody would cycle from London to Brighton, you know, and like not. You know, and they'll do that, but they don't have to understand it. You don't have to understand the mindset of a gamer. You don't have to understand the mindset of a cyclist or someone who will climb Everest for you or anything like that. You just have to understand the basic mechanisms. Somebody wants to do this, they will raise money for you while they're doing it, and it's really just kind of a hobby. It's not like this kind of mysterious world. It's just something that people do in their spare time. And so if you want to, you know, crack gaming for goods, that's really all you're doing. You're just going to say, hey, do you want to do a 24-hour game-a-thon or however they want to set it up and raise money for us while you're doing it? The only difference I would say is that with gamers, a lot of the time, that's how they make their living. Like, they actually make their living through people giving them money to watch their live streams. So if you ask them to do it for you, you basically, it's more of sort of corporate thing almost, where you're saying, give up your wages for a day and give that to us. It's a very different thing to saying, give us something of disposable income. So it's worth knowing that sort of thing is that you want of that particular type of digital fundraising.
Yeah, I think, because I mean, in our case, it was one of my officers really gets it, and her husband was a gamer, so she talks their language, she knows what Twitch is, and she knows all that sort of, some of the jargon and things that we're doing. And what we found really helped was we basically put together a community fundraising pack, but the language is slightly different. Because if we sent them the generic community fundraising pack, they'd be like, well, we don't understand this, talk our language. And I think that's where charities have to be wary of just going in and being like, hey, you could do this for us, without actually understanding the way they speak. And like you say, exactly that. It is their day job in some cases. So they have to be really passionate about your cause, and you have to know what you are asking them to do and be involved. But it's got so much potential because it is just a whole community of people that are getting tips. And some of them are doing charity streams off their own bat anyway. So why not go in there and steer them towards your charity?
Don't worry.
Well, I think that's a good place to finish to wrap this one up. I think we covered some great topics there that could actually become podcasts in their own right, but we'll leave that for another day. But just quick thank you from me to Katie, Matt and Emily. Thanks for joining the podcast. Hope you managed to pick up some useful tips and tricks. I know we did for sure. Next up is Trillium with their webinar on People Over Platform, top tips to keep your fundraising goals front of mind during digital transformation. Make sure you stick around for that. Catch you in a bit.
Hey, it's Joel here from Charity Digital. For 17 years, we've been providing financial, remittance and settlement services to the UK charity sector, and we've learned that every charity is unique. Whatever kind of payment processing service you need, our team will help you find the most budget-friendly and stress-free solution. From automated donations to charity lottery entries, let us handle all the payments to your charity so you can concentrate on what's important, your cause. Learn more at charitydigital.org.uk/charity-payments.